Welcome to Agile After Dark, a podcast that addresses Agile topics not talked about in the light of day. I'm Jessica Gustalese.
And I'm Greg Adams Woodford. And over to this side of me.
Yeah, hopefully on your side of the screen. Yeah, Brandon Gartley.
Hi, everybody. On today's show, companies are trying to figure out how to bridge the gap that has grown between business and IT over decades of separation. And we're here to talk about what we're seeing across industries, why it needs to change, and how they might go about doing so.
Wait, so you said decades of separation. Shouldn't there be a divorce at this point?
Yeah. I know, right? I'm
talking about reconciliation.
Yeah. I mean, you talk to some people, some of those clients that I'm working with now that they've been working at the same place for 20 plus years, which is just mind-boggling to me. And they do feel like they're divorced from it. Mm-hmm. You know, they do feel that way. They're like, business, they have no clue what it is that we do. And we try and push back and they're like, we'll go do this somewhere else, you know? So it's really kind of, the IT is a cost center, you know, it's just a thing. And it's just been kind of similar where we talk about habits and behaviors and culture, all of that wrapped into one is, you know, because firms weren't, you know, big companies weren't really digital unless they are startups in a lot of ways. Greg, right?
Yeah.
IT just kind of came along as a necessary thing.
So if you're doing, let's say you're doing like a migration from an Oracle product to Salesforce or something like that. That's a massive project that costs. We worked with that in the past, and it's just a cost, but nobody realizes it's enabling the business, right? So you have to respect both things, right? But it's hard to think about it in a startup when you're making new products. It's like, oh, how much revenue are we generating versus what we're spending? In those migration things, it's just like, well, how your effectiveness is based on efficiencies or cost savings, right? So it's not a sexy thing, IT. It's not. It's a, like you said, it's a cost center, and it's measured by how much can we not suck.
Well, and it's treated as a cost center. The interesting thing, and I've said this, I think, on this podcast before, but the interesting thing for me is that in those large organizations or in the sort of more legacy organizations, these were organizations that were in finance, in government, in whatever, that happened to have an IT or a technology department. And that has changed. We are no longer organizations that happen to have IT parts. Great. We are technology companies that happen to be in retail, finance, government, et cetera. And so I think what we're talking about is how do we continue that shift of not treating technology as a cost center and really recognizing the value that it brings to mm-hmm. organizations, even in something like a migration.
Yeah, I mean, a recent report that I saw from the IDC, something like $2.3 trillion is supposed to be spent on digital transformation by like the end of next year. I mean, let's just look beyond the data. I mean, AI, you know, all of the things that we know. I mean, our technology, the iPhone just got released, the new one with all the AI components to it. Like, it's a part of our lives. So, you know, don't pay attention to that at your own peril, companies, right? Yeah. But we have the thing where business will say, and when I say talking about business, I'm talking like people that are kind of closer to the customers. They're kind of aligned in more of the traditional business functions, right? And different businesses can be organized in different ways. Like product companies have their different brands, so forth and so on. But they're closer to their customers. And they're kind of coming to IT and saying, hey, we want this specific thing. That's kind of like what we see. And I see a lot now. It's like, we have this very specific thing that we want. We want you to build it. How much is it going to cost? Because it's coming, again, IT is a cost center. You're going to basically have this cost for that. And when they come back, they're like, either, oh, it's going to cost as much, or we're going to get it done by this time, or, well, you know, compared to the other things that we have going on, we don't really know we can do it. Then you get created with this big thing that's kind of going on now that I see all the time is what they call shadow IT, which basically the business says, sweet, hiring a consulting firm. I'm going to have them come in, build all this stuff, and try and lay it on top of the IT infrastructure that's there, right? Which is an unmitigated disaster typically because they don't have the security measures. They don't, you know, plug it into the systems that were already there. I mean, it's
there's a ton of waste in that model. There's a ton of waste in that model.
Right. And, you know, we love talking about management, but technical debt, like the technical debt is serious in those situations.
Yeah. And then it all ends up being held together by bubblegum and shoestrings and duct tape because nobody's talking to each other. It's unsustainable.
Yeah, not at all. And I mean, the other piece of it that I see a lot is kind of this concept of everything's a priority, right? So you kind of have this funnel to IT as a cost center, right? Which is these different business parts of the organization are coming down to IT. Maybe there's a few towers within that, and they're coming down to it and saying, hey, we need this. And then the IT group's having to spread out wide to try and get all of those things to work together. And then another request comes in and they're like, well, we have this other thing. Well, they're like, that has nothing to do with me. That's that business function over there.
I don't care. Right?
I'm more important.
Right? Well, but this is what they do. Then they hire a project manager who essentially builds a plan, and then they go around and bug the shit out of it. Sorry, to get things done, and but they're not. There's no coherence between the business and the function of IT, which is building stuff, which should which people should respect. It's really amazing what developers do, you know, and it's like magic. Like I don't get it all the time. Some of the things that they can come up with, you know, and it's a disgrace that the two can't work together. I've been consulting with these different companies and it's always the case, you know, it's sort of like, well, you know, the IT people and the business people don't see eye to eye because the product person or the business person doesn't know enough about the whatever technology. Right. Well, the business person's job isn't to know the technology. Right. Because there's subject matter experts, there's product owners and bits analysts or whatever. Their job is to know the business, right? And they shouldn't dictate to IT how they're supposed to build it. But they say, here's a need. I'm going to trust you to go build this. And we'll have, I don't want to say gates, but we'll have checkpoints along the way, right? To make sure that we're moving in the same direction. And that way IT can feel a part of the business. Because I think part of it's just like, yeah, I just work here. I just come in and do my thing, but they don't get the business people get a sense of progress or, success. And IT people are like, yeah, we're just in the background. You know, we're like stagehands. We're not, and they should understand the business and they should be engaged. You know, they should be. I think that's a real problem is that the business doesn't engage IT in a respectful way.
100% agreed. And a problem that occurs because of that is then we've got a whole group of really smart, to your point, creative people who are building widgets. And so the solutions are not the best solutions that you could possibly get because they aren't connected to understanding the what and the why. They're just told, here's the exact thing that we want you to build. And I mean, if we don't allow people to use their ingenuity and their creativity and their understanding of the technology to build incredible solutions, then we're really missing out on what might be possible. That's all I have about that.
And Greg, I want to go back to something it's so funny because I've been uploading some of the old podcasts to the YouTube channel to kind of get us all set up since we're going to have video. And one of the ones was like, the P word's like process, bad.
Yeah.
Process is bad. I can't remember. What was it, like a failed something? What do you remember what you used to say about process?
It's process is a string of failures that are pushed together. And when you build a process, it's based on failure, not on success. Right. So you're going by a negative versus a positive thing.
Yeah. And I think that the interesting thing about this chasm that exists between business and IT is that there's this feeling that process or frameworks of some sort can solve this issue. And having tried a few swings at that myself, I'm not saying I'm the best at all of this, but I see the limitations there. And, you know, Jess, I'd be interested in kind of your experience there too, in terms of, you know, yeah, you're trying to change culture, but how much are you doing that by trying to change the actions instead of like trying to change the behaviors?
I literally just had a conversation about this today. And I think that's one of the biggest misses is there's so many people and organizations that try to plug in process or framework or what, like just plug it in. Like, let's just get the events or the meetings or the artifacts or whatever. Let's change our HR titles, which all of that stuff is great and works really well, except if you're building a house with an incredible framework and all of the, everything looks beautiful, but you're building it on quicksand, you're still building it on quicksand and it's all going to fall apart.
Yeah. So, and by the way, processes, they don't fix problems. People fix problems. People solve. A process is just an enabling, enabling tool that you use, but it's the people that you have to focus on when you're trying to get something done. It's not a process. A process is just a way to lift, some of the burden off of the people who are actually trying to do something creatively, right?
You know what the fun part is, Greg? Is the process is the easy part. Like, that's the
right.
Right. That's a great point.
The easy part. Then you toss human beings in there. Oh my gosh, does it get messy? And that's the hard part. That's the real hard work. Process framework, that's the easy stuff. It's the human component that takes the real effort, the real work. And if you're not paying attention, you're building it on quicksand.
Yep.
Yeah. And you mentioned framework, Jess. I mean, I think that's kind of a concept of, okay, we've gone beyond process. We're just trying to set up the space, right? And kind of the levels and the roles. But the frameworks that, are kind of popular these days, what I find is either they're extremely prescriptive, right? And they're kind of saying you have to have, and it's built off of some experience, right? They're building it off of, hey, we know, like, we need to have these sort of characters, these people in these spaces to make certain decisions and so forth. But when you're trying to then like apply that to, I mean, large enterprise companies, they're like, get out of here. Like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're expecting me to go to HR and completely change the job mapping and all of this stuff. I mean, come on. Like, we've got levels for pay grades and all this kind of stuff that you're going to have to figure out. And I mean, big T transformation is, I mean, I'm not seeing it, seeing it very often. We'll talk a little bit about later about what I am seeing that kind of emulates big T transformation a little bit, but in terms of what we're used to seeing from a scaling, large, agile, new ways of working things, I'm not seeing it that much anymore because people come a little wise to it in terms of, we've kind of gone through those cycles.
Right. Well, I mean, I literally, again, heard this today, earlier today, was, this was something that Ken Schwaber said back in the day. Like, so these large, heavy, prescriptive, this worked somewhere. Like, that's, so if it worked for me, I'm Jessica, that's great. But if we try to solve a Greg problem with a Jessica solution, Greg's not going to get his problem solved. That's why these large, massive things don't work, is because maybe they did work at one place, but you have to have the understanding of the nuances and the flexibility to apply what might work as a Jessica solution to what's Greg's problem and how might Greg learn from Jessica's solution rather than, Greg's just going to take Jessica's solution and apply it to a Greg problem and think that it's going to work.
You know what, Jessica, I want to expand on that because that's a good point that you make. And it's when I think about, our experience really is that everybody wants a simple solution, something to think of. That's why they hire consultants, frankly, right? Because they're like, they'll figure it out for us, And I think it's mostly the senior management that feels that, I just want to fix this problem as fast as possible. But it doesn't work that way. I mean, like you said, every problem is different. Every team is different. Every person is different. You have to emotionally invest in that. And I don't think most leaders want to do that emotional investment to learn and understand, you know, not only what the problem is, but who are the right people to help fix the problem and how do they interact, you know?
You know, it's funny. I'm kind of backpedaling a little bit because there are similar problems across industries, especially when we're talking about transformation, things like that. There are similar issues, right? And so it feels comfortable to apply the same solutions. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of my snarky attitude. You know, there have been times that I've been to different companies and been like, oh yeah, special snowflake. I'm sure we haven't seen this problem before. We have to make your special solution. But actually, you do have to figure out what are the snowflake parts of that organization, even though it's a similar problem. Again, add human beings into it. Add the history of what's happened in that organization. There are actually snowflakey parts of any problem. And if you're not solving for those, you're not actually going to solve for the problem.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, it's again, there are patterns, right? So like you're talking about, there are similar problems that exist with every, you know, kind of situation, but you have to look at the patterns and you have to look at that individual situation in order to, like you said, identify where the snowflakes are so that you can address them, right?
Love it. We're such pattern. Human beings are pattern-making machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that we get to recognize that, yes, there are patterns. And yes, there are patterns to help with patterns. But yeah, there are nuances. And if we're not paying attention to those, again, quicksand.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of, to kind of wrap up what we're seeing, what I've been seeing a lot from the approach versus the request is really trying to change the actions. So it kind of goes to the framework and the process that we're trying to change the actions to then somehow revert back to changing the culture. Like, because I think we would all agree when you're kind of trying to say, hey, you know, there's a gap between business and IT. That's a culture thing. Like, you've got cultures too. Very well entrenched cultures that have a lot of different variables to them and people and personalities and so forth. And we're kind of like, okay, we need to change the actions like that. You know, we see this, we recognize it. And so please come in and tell us either a process or framework or changing the actions. And what I'm seeing that's being a little bit more effective. And I think this goes to what you're saying, Jessica, around, you know, we're infusing people into this, right? So instead of saying, okay, let's look at the old John Smith way of I'm going to examine every single little step of what each person does and try to create the most efficient way of doing that. And then managers look at them and say, hey, this is the most efficient way. You need to do it this way. That's micromanagement. The concept of, well, it's a knowledge economy. So we have to kind of look at their behaviors. Like, you know, what, you know, how are we communicating? Like, how are we understanding prioritization? How are we starting to look at what those behaviors are of the actors that are in it? And I think there's some things that you can take, to your point, from past experiences and saying, oh, I recognize this behavior pattern, right? This is sometimes the individual level. Oh, this is someone that's come up and like been a really good producer, either through business or through technology, but they're being asked to, you know, be a leader and they don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
So how do we help them from a behavior standpoint?
Right. And so Brandon, I want to ask you a question. How come that whenever Jess makes a point, you want to follow up on her point, but you don't do that for me? Like, you don't ever say, hey, Greg, that's a good point. Let's talk about that. But Jessica, she gets first in the line. She's like,
well, you may or may not remember, Greg, we started the podcast just the two of us, and it was a bit of a struggle. I don't know if you remember.
It was.
That.
I do remember that.
And I remember we did one thing that was one podcast, just the two of us. And afterwards, because I had to make it all gimmicky, of like it was about Harry Potter. Do you remember that? It was like the Marauders map.
Oh, God, I remember that. Yes, I do remember.
I think
that
was the second one or third podcast or something like that. And well,
I'm like, what the fuck
I thought it was
talking about
pretty funny, by like, you know, bringing in like Harry Potter spells and different stuff. At the end, we both looked at each other like, yeah, let's not do that. So I think maybe there's just like a little post-traumatic podcasting disorder, right?
Yeah.
From that. But no, I'm actually very interested to in all seriousness, because I think Jess and I both, we come from a little bit different background than you, where you really came from more of the product, like product management, product, and which is really interesting to me because you said to me a long time ago, hey, we really should be focusing on the product thing. This whole framework and process stuff, while interesting in a way to like get teams to be more efficient about how we deliver stuff, like you're not going to get good delivery of value if you don't have a more product centric, which kind of gets us like into the next section, where it's like, well, why do we need to see this change? Like, we kind of talked about what we're seeing, but you know what, why do we think it needs to be there? And I'll pull out one of my statistics again. But back in the day, Greg used to always like, you have to be the nerd, you know, bring the statistics.
Nerd alert. Nerd alert.
Yeah. We were going to have like a little soundboard that like had like, anyway. I digress. But a survey by New Vantage Partners found that 91.9% of executives report their companies are investing in big data and AI.
Yeah.
That's almost 100%, which makes sense.
Our next show needs to be about this AI thing, because I have very strong opinions about it. And
of course you do.
Having been, you know, part of
yelling at clouds
and all that. So I would love to. It's I'm going to have some serious opinions about it. But anyway, go ahead.
But like e-commerce sales are expected to reach like $6.54 trillion within the next year. And this is all in the U.S., by the way. This is not worldwide. This is within the U.S. So, I mean, I think there's a need to redefine modern IT. I think we're at that tipping point. What I think we kind of alluded to has been done up to this point is, oh, we're going to fix it with process, right? We're going to, okay. Like we're starting to deliver in more agile way with the teams. Okay. We'll scale up to that, to the middle part. And I think we all can agree there's a lot of challenges in that middle layer. But then kind of it gets a little fuzzy after that, no matter how strict a framework you're trying to put into place. And I think part of it is that middle layer of multiple teams and who is kind of guiding those. But I see a lot of nodding from Jess. So yes, Greg, I'm going to pass it over to Jess because I think she has something to add to this.
I have something to add, but that's okay. Don't worry.
I'll pass it to you.
No, you go. Mine is going to be irrelevant anyway.
Yeah, I just, you know, I said it before, but we are technology companies who happen to work in X industry, Y industry, whatever industry you're in. And I think that if we're not treating our organizations as such, the organizations that are not, do not understand that are going to be the ones that we won't see in 5 years.
Yeah. And so adding on to that, thank you, Jess, for that introduction. So if you
see, it works really well. Yeah, it's just like she says something, it's like, oh, yeah, right.
Let her lead. If you think about a company like Amazon or even like Shutterfly, you think of them as a technology company, but really how they make their money is operations, which has nothing to do. The software plays a part, right, to get the things, but it's really about acquiring whatever asset they want and then shipping it in the most effective way so that they don't lose money on shipping. So that's another thing where it's not just IT, but IT has a serious interaction with all the systems that make that happen. Right. So it's a lot of companies are more complicated than just IT and business. It's like, what about manufacturing? What about shipping? Like,
technology in all of that as well.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And you know what? Interesting thing about that, Greg, that I've run into very recently, and it kind of is interesting because you think it would create more of a cohesion there. Oh, sorry. Is I should have known not have the mic so close to where my hands move. is that like supply chain, right? I mean, you're talking about something that kind of you have to have the technology now to run it, but it really is a business function an operations function, if you will, because they're trying to make it as inexpensive as possible and as efficient as possible. The interesting thing about that is, and we'll kind of get to, you know, the one of the ways we can look at this is kind of product-based, you know, way of looking at things, is that technology, IT, they use something like SAP, and they're like, oh, that's our product.
Hmm.
That's not a product.
Right.
That's a product that's sold to you, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they're like, oh, yeah, SAP, that's our product. And like, none of your customers ever see this. Right. None of your people that are in the end see any of that. They're,
right.
And it's a very kind of budget heavy, right? You know, they always say, oh, yeah, you can do that out of the box. You never can. Yeah. So there's a lot of customization. There's a lot, you know, technical debt rises very quickly in that space. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get somebody like Stas or someone on here again, because like there's some interesting changes that are going to be happening at SAP that I'm hearing about are cool. But as it stands right now, it's, you know, it's configuration, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And it's very back end, very, you know, so no one on the business side is going to say, oh yeah, I need that configuration where it allows mm-hmm. me to have it, you know, do a decision tree about which, you know, part that the materials are coming from. I don't care.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I don't care at all. Yep.
So, yeah, and by the way, you're absolutely right. And think about that. Those businesses, whether it's Oracle or any kind of like SaaS company, they're always configuring where it almost becomes their implementations are new products. This is why it always goes over budget. It always takes longer. It's just because nobody accepts the fact that, oh, I mean, you're just going to buy this thing and plug in, and then we're just going to configure a little bit. And like, it doesn't work that way. It literally becomes a 4-year project just to do an implementation. Right.
Yeah. Well, cause then there's always the upgrades though after that.
Yep.
So you get your first, you know, configuration of that. And I'm not trying to bag an SAP. Like this is not, that's not the, you know, let's trash on SAP. It's just interesting because we talked about cultures. So IT looking at something like SAP as a product.
Yeah.
It's very hard as we kind of talk about, you know, where some of the possible solutions to some of these challenges is when you start to talk about, well, let's look at kind of having product based, you know, ways of looking things. They're like, oh, I have product. They have SAP. I have mm-hmm. Windows. I have, you know, this or that. And that is so ingrained in that culture because A, it's such a high budget item, and B, it's sold to them as a product. So that's what they think of products.
Yeah. And back to your point about the upkeep maintenance costs, specifically what those big SaaS companies will do, or even reporting engines or whatever, in my experience, is they'll say, okay, we're going to sell you the software, the license to use the software. We're going to have consulting to help you set it up. Microsoft,
MS365 or whatever it's called.
Yep. Whatever. Yep. But what they do is they do the implementation, but part of that contract is between 18 and 20% year on what you bought. Every year you're paying that maintenance to get all the upgrades, to get the support, it's a very, very costly thing. Mm. And the business has to understand that. And the IT department has to understand that, because now your partner's driving your business because of the cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of gets to my next point in terms of the need. Talk about a slow process of, you know, 4 years of implementation of something. Mm. I mean, with our business needs of our customers, for the clients that I work with, like changing so rapidly. I mean, we're kind of at the next like .com boom with this AI stuff, and we will have a show about that. But I mean, I'm seeing now kind of the eyes opening up from the business, because they're kind of like, okay, technology is a central factor here, but the technology part of the shop has, and it's not their fault because it's still relatively new, but they're still trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to help you use this to pivot and serve customers better, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a challenge.
For sure.
And that's why it's important, right? I think part of it is, it's always been there that we have to be able to respond more quickly. We have to be able to know our audience, which is really, really, so in our more traditional agile space, kind of having Greg, that product knowledge, and not even just the product knowledge, but the user knowledge, like the outside in sort of thinking versus the inside out.
Yep.
Right. How do we qualify the things that we're working on? Because that's what we talked about as one of the problems, right? Is, you know, you can't have everything be the top priority.
Right.
But that's just not sustainable. I think we all know that. But we've tried to answer it by saying, okay, there are these processes you can do. You have these backlogs, you have these sessions, and you have these things. But I think it's still what I'm finding is where we went from a project-based approach where the CFO maybe had some influence in terms of what got delivered because it's based off of money, right? Projects, right?
Yep.
Where we got into more of an agile way of like, okay, we have a backlog and stuff, but we kind of became like feature factories. Like, are we being predictable?
That's a good point.
Are we like getting stuff out more efficiently? Yeah. You know, we say we're prioritizing it, you know, we're having those conversations, but who's making those decisions?
Yeah. No, right? I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's, you know, that again, it goes back to that disconnection. And you know, the feature thing. So having a user-centered, you know, design philosophy, right? Design thinking, whatever you want to call it, is very interesting. But it, like, if you look at any, I'm not going to pick on Microsoft. I will pick on Microsoft actually. If you look at Word and Excel, like 75% of the features that are in those two products nobody ever uses. Mail merge, whatever it is, I don't know what it, you know, but it's like they overbuild it with this audience that's invisible that they don't really ever need to spend the money. They can make the things that actually people use better versus, you know, throwing on. And it's part of the sales process, right? So we have this new feature coming out, you know, like nobody's going to use it, but they got to do something. The salespeople have to have something to sell. Well, we just got the same old thing. It's just a little bit better. That's not a good sales pitch.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing the whole time. Sorry, Jess. I know you're about to say something, but all I can think of is Greg. It's thing that's on like TikTok and IG. So I don't expect you to know what this is, but it's like these memes, things that you see about like, I'm a freak in the sheets. And it's like, they can do all these like cool things in Excel. Right. And they're and they can do all this stuff in Excel. And it's kind of like, oh, okay. I was about to turn. Okay, good. Okay, that's good. Where was this going? Nope. Okay. Fine. Yeah. But anyway, what were you going to say, Jess? I probably really just kind of threw you for a loop there, but.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going. I just feel like we need that nerd alert button again. I'm at a smaller organization right now, and there's a huge amount of customer centricity. All of the conversations are very, very focused on user value. How is the user using this? There's all kinds of ways to get that information, to practice, play with, see what's resonating, see what's not. We've got all kinds of stuff in place. But again, we're a small organization. So my question for the two of you is, where have you seen that be effective at scale, at enterprise, at some of these legacy places that for the longest time, and we all know that I've said this exact phrase on this podcast before, that we've been led around by people's tummies. Well, I feel like this might be the thing that's going to work.
My gut. Yeah.
So Jess, let me tell you about this. A really great product strategy is called buy a feature. So what you do is so my experience was in education. So you pick teachers, lab managers, superintendents, not students necessarily, but people who actually use the application that we were building. And you get a cross section across the whole country because every school system has a different, you know, every county has a different school system and the tests are different for each state. And so it's very complicated. And so what you do is everybody has their own need, their customers. This is where you get into trouble because as a product person, you have to say, I have to prioritize all these things and I'm not going to make everybody happy. People are going to be pissed at me because I'm not going to do the thing that they want. So what we would do is we would take, and it takes a lot of work to set it up, but we would take all the features that people ask for, the most common things that people ask for, and we'd stick them up on the wall. In this, our case, it was actually Windows. And we would say, okay, all these features that are here, all the things you guys have asked for, cost $100 million. but we're only going to give you $75 million split amongst all of you. And you have to figure out what features are more important to you. You have to vote. So we give them these little dots and they would be able to put the money where their vote was. And then what you would see is over time, at first they were like, oh yeah, that's mine. I got it. That. Then they're like, ooh, I really want that too. Maybe. And then they started colluding with each other to say, hey, if you vote for my thing, I'll vote for your thing. And then they started understanding priority. Because until they have to actually do it and they have to understand that they live in a universe of, you know, product requests that they had. And so that was a huge helpful way. And we'd always pick the most angry people to come because they would always be more honest about it.
So who are the people, Greg? Like, are these like actual users of the product?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Actual users of the product. Okay. And different users though, teachers use it different than lab managers, than superintendents. So we tried to get a cross section of people so we could get all of their opinions, and it worked really well. And, you know, we made a day and a half out of it and took them to dinner. And I mean, it takes a lot of prep work to cost all those things, you know, all those features out. But in the end, it just does a great job. And you get to a point where you're like, okay, guess what? This is our roadmap. This is our backlog because they voted on it. Not everybody, but you know, a good cross section of people voted on it. So I think that's one way to kind of help solve that problem. There's a bunch of tricks like that these kinds of activities that product people can do to help that. I don't think that answers your question, but that's just one way that we kind of tried to deal with getting more focused in on, because again, there's so many user requests and whatever, you know, it's always like, salespeople do this same thing. They're like, whatever bugged the client last week is the most important thing.
Anything. It's super important.
Yeah. And you're like, it's just because you're mad about that thing. But guess what? That thing is connected to three other things. If we fix that bigger thing, then we're going to solve all these problems, right? But they only want to talk about what just happened to them last week or last month, you know? And then the salespeople were like, yeah, we have to have that. I can't sell because this is the greatest thing about products. Like salespeople are like, well, I don't have that feature. I can't make my number. So it's product's fault because they won't, you know, build the thing I need. And I'm like, dude, you're like 50th on the list. No way.
Talk about culture, Matt Robeson. Right? Sales. Yeah. Not naming names. But I mean, so is that – so in kind of the cycle, the typical product cycle. So we're starting to get into kind of, you know, one of the ways that is helpful to use – to help bridge the gap that I'm seeing a lot, which is getting more towards a user-centric product operating model. And one of the things that I'm kind of, I've been really diving into and talking to people, been trying to text you. I got a lot of blue text with no other text on the other side, Craig.
I thought you were talking to
living Jess. Out on the all beach right. In New Jersey. Sorry, you know, I don't get two locations, but it's
my Jim Jabroni on. You know, I got to get down there and put my Jabroni on.
You do. But it's kind of that. It's really interesting because that's what I was talking about: the outside in versus inside out. So Jess, exactly what she says, like the inside out is like, hey, my gut tells me this, or I really believe that. And that's what's interesting because a lot of times that's the business in a lot of our firms, because sales, well, maybe in your Jess now, where you world you are now, but when I'm dealing with like big, large enterprise companies, right? Is you've got like your business, sales is a, they're like a whole other thing. I mean, that's a bigger gap between IT and them, right? But the business is basically saying, and maybe it's from sales, I don't know, but they're kind of like, hey, we have this, we just signed this problem. We have this specific thing that we need to get built. It's this very specific thing. And maybe it's a bigger chunk of work of things. And then they let IT break it down. But typically it's pretty, it's almost like the old waterfall ways, right? It's like, here's our requirements. Like, I'll go build it. And you can kind of mess with, you know, how you build it in the systems. We don't care. But you know, here's the major requirements we have for it. And what I'm finding that's interesting is there's been a kind of a shift to an understanding that a couple ways to help break the chasm of business IT. One actually is somewhat framework based, which is, hey, the product people really should be from the business, right? And not from the business that they come in IT and now they're IT people. No. They're spending a majority of their time in the business. And so they understand kind of the conversations that are happening. And so at least they're kind of exposed more to the larger things. I mean, that's like a number one. Now, what I find is we say that to any sort of IT project, right? This is an IT cost center. And they're like, oh yeah, we'll talk to the business. The business is like, what? Like, you expect me to like give up one of my people to be working with IT? So that's a cultural, you know, barrier that, you know, you're going to need to have like the right sort of conversation, the right sort of consulting, coaching, whatever. In terms of, hey, here are the benefits. So that's a number one. That's almost like the easier fix, right? And that was the way it was originally intended, at least from the product owner at, you know, at the team level. It was always supposed to be a business person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, you know, instead of that middle layer I talked about is complicated, right? And when I say that, I think we all understand what I'm saying there, which is it's not really the people's fault that are in middle management, because typically they're like been like really good solution people, right? They've been top performers. Right. And so they make technology managers who have experience with the technology as like that middle management over those teams, right?
The worst ever. It always happens. And those people they're not built and don't want it to be, because they're good developers. So that means they're good developers. That means they're cranky and they're opinionated and they're not a good manager.
Well, no, so but I think there's a space for them. I think there's a space for them. In my opinion, there's a space for them to be at that level, but they don't need to be the one that are managing what's getting done.
Right? People.
They're supposed to be the ones to say that the team, in my opinion, the product team people members are like, God, I'm really stuck. Like the way I was going to approach this, I don't think it's working. And that high performer is like, oh yeah, have you tried this? Or, you know, you have experience in that and so forth. Mm-hmm. And some people get that confused with architect, which I think is a different, some overlapping skills, but I think it's also different.
Totally right? Different. Yep.
But there's a space. There's a space for that type of person. We've just been putting them in a place to fail.
But the problem with that, Brandon, is that there are from an HR perspective, there are only certain paths you can take. So it's like, oh, he's a high performer. What are we going to do? Well, we have to promote him to manager. They're not going to be a good manager. They're not a people manager. They're not going to be good, but you should reward them. Like you said, you should reward them for the work that they do, because they're the good developers are like, they're magicians. They do amazing stuff. You're like, how did you do that? You know? And they're like, I just thought about this and that. And so, but the problem is HR forces us into these constructs that are like, oh, if you're going to go promote it, you got to go be a manager and then a director and then whatever, you know?
So I'll slightly disagree with that. I actually think that they can be good managers if they're asked to manage a certain component of the work.
Yeah.
Right. If they're good managers in terms of like technology solutionists, which a lot of them are.
Yeah.
They can be very good. It's like, hey, I'm a young pup just learning my way through the world of development or engineering or testing or whatever. Like provide them guidance and mentorship and, you know, helping them figure out their problems. And they can look at that person and be like, man, that guy's awesome. I kind of want to be like, and also, hey, I have a space up here. And it's also not that where I have to sit there and do my one-on-ones and say, you know, how did you perform? That's not, and we've talked about HR a long time ago with Carrie, my wife, a long time ago about how that needs to change. But I think there's a space for them. But the other side of that is product managers, actual product managers.
Right.
Well, being at that for those groups of teams that, and this is where I was getting into the solution. And Jess, sorry, just let me click with, and then I'll let you. What I'm seeing is that user centric product operating model is the closest thing to aligning the business and IT, because you're basically saying to IT, no more of this down and spread as much as possible, with the understanding that architecture and network, and you're not going to have all those people on each of the teams. It's just budgetarily not. Unless you're, you know, Amazon or whatever. But I don't even think they do that. There's going to be some shared sort of platform and services piece. But basically, the teams are aligned to actual products that the business is like, yes, that is what I deal with every day, right? I don't deal in enterprise services and cloud and this or that. They're like, no, my product is this thing that I deal with my customers. And these are like the four or five clusters of applications. It could be, there's different ways to organize it, but it could be a cluster of applications that, you know, are the products that people use. And so when you go that way, you then need to have an actual product manager.
Yes.
Right. Who can, to your point, like do the discovery and validation of the market problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, let me know, please. Great. Jess is waiting.
I'm just going to ask you, can you let me know when I can talk? So just, I mean, I'll defer. So just let me know. Just give me like a little, you know,
Greg's having a little, anxiety about not being the host anymore, but that's okay. Jess, please.
Well, okay. So here's what I'm excited about is that we've reached this tipping point, right? Where, so Agile is a thing that's out. Everybody's doing it or trying to do it or whatever, right?
So like the second or third time. Yeah.
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 At a minimum, you've got teams who are working to be more effective together. Small teams who are work together and do the thing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The interesting part about that, so I think this is actually, we're at a historical tipping point again.
Agreed.
So there was a historical tipping point when the Agile Manifesto came out and the principles and things started changing, things started happening differently because it needed to. When all of that happened, we weren't at a point where business understood that technology is an investment, right? We're talking about it's a cost center. Now it's actually an investment and you are investing in these things. And so they weren't willing to give up their business person, their product person, right? So what did technology do? We'll put in a proxy. They'll go out to the business and ask all the questions and bring back as much information as they possibly can. But of course, we're playing telephone. And by the time, you know, that was still a problem. And now we're once again at that tipping point of saying, oh my gosh, like technology is an investment. We are investing in this new set of features for the specific product to make our customers happy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we need to embed people who understand business into the making of the decisions for what our teams are working on creating. Cause that's important. It just wasn't seen as important before. So it was technology people put in these proxy roles for the longest time.
Yeah. Can I talk, Brandon, now?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Thank you. And good point, Jess. I totally agree with everything you said. And I think in my experience, the most successful, if you talk about embedding, I think it's an interesting word to use because in the scenarios that I've seen that have worked with this user centric, the product owns the business, which they own the understanding of what the user does. If if the development team and the product team, from the product manager to the product owner to the developers to the test to the quality people, if they have to be not only embedded, but they have to be one unit, they have to be. Their goals, their commitments are all of their responsibility, right? Because if something starts going wrong in development, they're like, we can't do that. Okay, product people, what are we going to do? Okay, well, products, hey, we're here. We got it. We'll figure out how we can get around it or explain it away or whatever, you know. But I think that that they have to be looked at as one team versus just, like you said, embedding people. Or this proxy thing is so classic. Like, and it never works because the technology people don't think like business people.
Yeah.
They just don't. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Right. I mean,
right. That's what I would add on to what both of you have said is this is where, who was it I was reading the other day? Oh, Kagan. Kagan came out with a new book, Marty Kagan.
Yeah, Marty.
And I think it's called Transformation or something like that, or Product Model. He's like, it's his fourth, you know, of those series.
Kylie's in love with him, by the way. We saw him at
I can imagine.
We went to product camp in California and we saw him and he's great. He's awesome. He's really
good. And you know, I always am a little tentative about authors and books and stuff for the very same reason we said is like, where are they coming from? He kind of comes from the startup space and, you know, we're dealing with like trying to steer battleships through creeks. Like it's a little less, nimble than maybe some of the things that he's trying to do.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is to your point, Jess, and to what you were saying, God, which is that with that feature factory sort of, you know, hey, the business, okay, well, let's bring product managers over. Now we have product managers saying, okay, here's the things I want to get built. The lease is coming from the business. That's better. That's an improvement, right? Like they're more attached. But I think the really cool secret sauce is, and this is what Kagan was outlining, was you don't bring the solution of what needs to be solved.
Right.
You bring the problem.
Yes.
To the teams.
Yep. Yep.
So if you bring, hey, this is the problem. So when I do my, you know, validation and discovery of market problems and what's our opportunities for investment, and I'm looking at my notes because I don't remember all of it, but like, how do we position the product? Like, you know, how do we do all of those things? And that's kind of a product manager's world. Right. That's their cycle, right?
Right.
What they're coming out with is not, oh, I have this specific feature or this specific, what we would call an epic or big block of work. This one, no, I have this problem I need to solve. You go to the triad in the team, which is, you know, kind of the product within the team's technology and design, and say, hey, this is the problem. And then they do the evaluation of different risks.
Yeah. And here's on the product side, here's where I think the product people fail, is that they don't invest the time to explain to the developers what the business objective or goal is. Because if you're asking them to solve a problem, they have to understand the context. And product people just say, no, this is what I want. This is the backlog. I gave you the backlog. Why can't you understand? Like, they need to understand the business context of why this is important. Because imagine, like I've always said this, if a developer has to make 5 decisions or 10 decisions a week and when they're coding, when they're actually building something, and they don't have the business context, they're going to make 10 bad decisions every week, which is going to cost you so much down the line. So the product people have the responsibility of ensuring that the people who are working on the product understand, here's what we're trying to do. And they may not be as articulate as they can be, because sometimes it's very wishy-washy on the product side, but they need to give the information to the developers so that they can be creative and solve the problem. To your point, Jess, I mean, it's absolutely.
100%. And I've actually seen what a difference that makes. Like, being connected to, again, and we've all worked at global organizations, right? Like, I think this is a product problem. I think this is the fact that we have locations across the globe. Like, I think about a team that I was working with that they would just get the requirements, quote unquote, from North America over in another country across in a different time zone, and so they were building widgets essentially, and they weren't connected to, like, sure, they can build a widget. They'll build a widget and build a widget and build a widget and build a widget. Once we actually got them connected to our point, the business side of it, and they actually understood that what they were doing helped keep lights on or turn lights back on after something like a power outage. And we're talking about during the pandemic, right? So we're talking about kids being able to go to school, parents being able to work, people being able to cook their food. Once they understood the absolutely vital work that they were doing to ensure that people could live their lives, how do you think their decision-making changed?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The decisions they were making day in and day out
were
significantly different. Bugs went down by a significant amount, and they were passionate about, that's what they talked about. Is this going to get people's lights on? Is this going to help Johnny go to school? Is this going to make sure that Dad gets a paycheck because he was able to go to work that day? That is an entirely different conversation.
Yeah.
Build this widget, build this widget, build this widget.
And that's interesting in terms of breaching the culture of, and we had that great podcast back when Ditton, back in the day, of like, developer gets his wings. You know, I always have those kind of wacky titles, but he taught, it was really great conversation with him because he talked about developers being creative problem solvers. And I've never let go of that since that conversation, because I think there is a culture within the businesses, hey, it's technology. There's one way to solve the problem. I honestly believe that they kind of have that sense that there's not multiple approaches for things. And, you know, some are leaner than others, which, you know, we like the concept of MVP or kind of keep as lean as possible to iteratively improve on things. And so, like, to your point, I think that that's another cultural gap, is that the business looks at IT and says, when I tell you to do this thing, I know that you're going to do it. There's only one way to do it. And that's not right. That's actually not true. And I, you know, I would probably be willing to survey a lot of business people I work with, and they would say, yes, there's one way to do it.
And that's why it's treated as a cost center and not an investment. Yep.
They're just code monkeys. They're just code monkeys. They're just going to do what we tell them to do. There's no respect there.
We're investing in making our product do amazing product things that are going to go out in the world and do amazing things. That's the shift. It is a mindset shift. It's not IT's fault. It's not product's fault either. I mean, we are where we are because we got here. Like, that's
what I'm But and that's why process and framework's not going to fix it.
It's respect. It's respect. Respecting from both sides of the position of saying, yes, the technology people are great creative problem solvers. The business people understand what it's like. Respect each other, love each other. Like, I'm not getting all hippie or anything because you know how I feel about that. But it is true. If you just talk to somebody and you put a little bit of emotional investment in, you're going to get way more out of that.
Greg, are you saying that people might be helpful in solving some of these problems, these human problems?
No, I don't. I think process really is the way to go.
Yeah. And I do want to say, when we talk about kind of the user-centric product operating models, and by the way, this is what I was talking about when I'm not seeing big T transformation anymore. This is the closest thing I'm seeing these days, by the way, is organizations not saying, hey, we need to completely upend how we deliver things. They're saying we need to upend how we're aligned closer to what our actual business is. Right. So we're not changing necessarily. Right. Yeah. And so there's a couple different, like I was working with a life sciences group that really kind of took off with some recent products that were very successful. And they realized that they were very like specific on their products. Right. They had kind of a alignment to each of the products, and they realized, you know, we really have kind of more of a customer segment. Like if we're really gonna say that, you know, it's really more about either obesity or diabetes, or, you know, like these are the types of medicines that, you know, we're going to have a lot of efficiencies and also learning by concentrating on the same customer segment. Sometimes it's user journey. So very similar to what we do with our value stream mapping exercise in Agile, right? Where we kind of say, hey, what's the journey of the, hey, I need something to get something. What's that journey? And that's the easiest one that I've seen from like Agile people starting to convert to this product model is they're like, okay, I get it. It's like, this is a user journey and this is how it's broken up. And these are the teams that align to it. Sometimes it's the products, like the little products, right? Like the life sciences switch from, but I've seen other ones that they have specific brands and specific products. They have multiple brands. So they're kind of like by brand/product. And those are your businesses. And they have a little bit different. There's some overlap in terms of the systems, but they have very specific ways that they're trying to address things getting to their consumers, right? And then delivery channels, which is kind of like you got Uber, you got Uber Eats. Right. You've got different ways that, you know, you got different customer segments, but you're still kind of the same company.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, you got those. And so you're kind of aligning to those.
But product people have to think about that because they have to translate that information because if you're saying we're going to, the company I work for, the average sale was $35,000. And then they wanted us to build a product that sold for $100. Well, the sales team isn't going to sell that because it's $100. Yeah. They're going to sell the thing that they can make the most money on, right? So you have to communicate that to the team, the overall team, to say, here's what we're trying to do. Let's adjust to see if we can make that happen. And I think that's like, again, the product side of things goes into product marketing. It goes into sales. It goes into support. They've got to create documentation. So somebody calls into the help desk. And I mean, when you're done with the code, you're only half done. You got to think about all the stuff down the line. And the developers need to be thinking about that too. How much more can we build into the product that will help support so that we don't have people calling in, right? Because that's a huge cost. So they need to understand that too. How is the product used? And you don't think about all that stuff. It's like, oh, code's done. I'm good. I'm done. I'm out. No, there's a whole line of things, marketing, sales, training, all this stuff.
Greg, and I think that goes to your point again about So as automated as we are getting, as you know, we've talked about AI, there's all kinds of things that are making our worlds faster and more efficient and all of those things. And what that means is that as human beings, we need to change our sets of skills. So like where before I was really good at this one type of coding, right? And then all of a sudden we needed everybody to be able to do all of it, right? Would totally make sense. And that again, we're in that evolution of you can't just understand the technology side of it. You actually have to understand the business end to end. So you have to understand like, here's what marketing is going to need from us. Here's how we're going to need to be able to work with that, with the PMMs, right? The product marketing folks. Here's what that means for sales. How do we help sales understand that they're getting what they're asked for, but we just have a different kind of language for it, whatever it is. But like everyone is now being asked to be more of a generalist with a specialty, but it's gotten bigger than just technology. It's like, we all need to understand business impacts end to end and technology limitations end to end. You can't just ask for, you know, a ticket to Venus because we aren't there yet. You know, so understanding all of that end to end, we're all needing to do that. And that's part of the, I think that there's just, so I'm going to tangent for a second, but I just think that there's a whole new set of skills and things needed for people entering the workforce now. So it's that understanding end to end, what's going on from a, if you're a technologist understanding business, if you're a business understanding technology, there's a whole set of human skills that are needed to people say soft skills, I hate that word, but human skills that are needed to be taught and practiced. There's collaboration skills, there's facilitation skills. There's a whole new skill set that's needed in the market now. And there has been ever in the past. And I think that it's important to actually recognize that, which is going to be one of the things that helps us to bridge that gap because we need everybody on both sides paying attention.
So there's a thing called in the product management, and it's not executed well almost ever, but it's called total product. And when you take a total product approach, it's the genesis from the backlog to the delivery to the customer. And if you're a good person, you think through that whole thing.
But let's you're using backlog, and I don't think it's in the traditional agile way of backlog, right? Like you're thinking of like, hey, we have this concept of this product and we have to qualify it and we have to like market pressure it and we have to know the need for it. Like there's a, it's not just like, hey, we have this thing in the backlog. Okay.
Yeah. There's a step before the backlog that is, you go out, you do market research, you figure out if there's a need, you figure out if you can address that market. If there's somebody who owns 80% of that market and you're going to only sell $100, you know, probably, you're like, why get into that? They already have a sales team that's like a more inside sales team that's cheaper. They're going to, so you got to think about that. And then you start building the backlog. And then it's like, how does the customer receive it? How does the salesperson feel good about giving this customer what they want, and how do they talk about it? What's the talk track, right?
Yeah, and our friend of the show, Kylie, who you mentioned, we did a good podcast back in the day with her about kind of the data that needs to be tracked once the product is actually out there, and you're doing enhancements to it and so forth. So telemetry, right? Like you're kind of monitoring what the usage is, and the technology now is crazy in terms of, again, another podcast we did with Steve back in the day where it was about kind of DevOps. But part of that is, you know, A/B testing, canary testing, incorporating all of that into, you know, there's a lot of different ways to test your product, but also have the data. Because when I talked about so much data and AI investment right now, like that has to come back. And I think that, you know, operations right now, and we know this very well, operations is very like, don't break, like, just like, let's keep everything like running. Whereas operations, as we know from more of a DevOps culture standpoint, is, you know, we built in the kind of the telemetry and the monitoring and all of that kind of stuff into what we're doing as part of the normal process. So that it's coming back and, you know, showing up in some of the decisions that we're making for the product from the product manager.
Yes, and I think we've been missing. Greg, go.
Well, no, I was just going to say, Brandon, that's a critical point, because if for instance, especially when it comes to metrics that you're building into the product to see how the product is performing. How many times was that button clicked or not clicked? How many, you know, there's a million things that you can track from a technology. But if the developers don't know that that's what they're also building in to just not doing a widget with the thing, they don't have that business sense about, hey, we're trying to get feedback. So we got to build tools in so we can, you know, do that. So Jess, go.
And so and having the business sense on the teams in the organization, actually looking at that information as it comes back. Because that's the thing, that's another part of the thing that we've been missing is we send these things, we iterate, we get stakeholder feedback during our reviews, we do all these things, but actual like market, is this doing the thing that we wanted it to do?
Yep.
Companies have data up the wazoo that they're not using.
Right. Yeah. And that's,
let around by their tummies and they're not actually taking the information and saying, did this do the thing that we thought it was going to do? We don't double check our work. And I think that's the thing that if we are able to bridge the gap and we're able to bring product focus, then the product focused teams are going to want to know that thing that we send out there in the world, is it doing the thing that we want it to do? Because if not, we want to fix it because we care about whether or not this problem that you brought to us has been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Putting all of that together is the way to make this all possible.
That you said it exactly right. That's part of bridging the gap. Hey, because the business is like, wow, this is valuable. This is really valuable. Like, I this is going to help me make some decisions, right?
Hey, because, sorry, Brendan. I was just going to ask Jess a question. How do you think that, in your experience, how different types of personalities or people that have certain patterns, like let's say a product person, a business person, and a developer. Like, how do you feel that they can communicate? I mean, I've seen it done very successfully. I've also seen it been very horrible. What's your feeling about how, if we're talking about bridging the gap, Brendan, that's why I thought about that. What challenges or what things do you think would help solve that problem?
Yeah, because you're talking about humans with different patterns, right? Generally. I mean, like, we're definitely generalizing. There's...
Two different cultures. I mean, yeah, we kind of, yeah. I mean, it is what it is.
From different places with different backgrounds, different educations. First of all, y'all both know this about me. I am such a huge proponent of the value of diversity. The diversity of thought, when you can get all of those people together from different backgrounds, from different types of education, there's so much more we can see. When we are coming from a multitude of perspectives, it's like seeing something 2D, we actually get to see something all the way around, up, down, middle, and center. Our solutions are going to be better. Now, again, diversity is also hard, right? Because we are different. It's not easy. We don't speak the same language all the time, or we come from different places. And so the things that I think are vital to having that experience where you're actually as a team working effectively, you have to invest in relationships. I think it's vital that these groups of people figure out ways to exercise empathy, learning to understand where the other one's coming from, and not holding unbelievably tightly to your own thing, right? Like, I mean, good product folks know this really well. Even though you're really excited about said feature and you think it's going to do the thing that you want it to do out in the world and you realize it doesn't, if you continue to hold on to that, you're going to waste a whole bunch of money and money and time and all the things.
Yep.
And so everyone in the group, though, needs to be able to say, I've got a thought, but I'm willing to let it go based on all of the information that we're getting from everyone. And so it's empathy, it's human skills, it's empathy, it's not holding on to rightness, it's spending time understanding what's going on with the other individuals. It's again with that, there's a whole new set of skills we need out in the marketplace now, and a whole heap of them are human skills. Yep. In order to be effective, no matter how much AI changes our world, no matter how automated we can make everything. It's the human skills are going to make these incredibly interesting human challenges that we're trying to solve solvable.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned AI and I think data, we kind of talked about the heavy investment in both of that. I think actually IT has a really good bargaining chip in this space now to, you know, say these are brand new, data is not brand new, but the way that we use it is a lot different now. And, you know, just tell us what the problems are. We'll tell you, we're close to this. We'll help you figure out how to solve it because you don't know AI. This is not just some web app that you're using or mobile app. Like this is complicated stuff that, you know, we can actually help drive the solutioning for.
And we'll solve it together.
Yeah,
right.
The problem and go play with it by ourselves in
our room.
And then hand you the solution. We're going to toss this ball back and forth until we get it right. Like,
yeah.
Don't give us the solution, but let's play with this thing together. Because if we do it together, we're actually going to find something usable rather than your solution, whatever you came up with, and my solution, whatever I came up with. Probably neither of them are right, but if we put them together, they actually might do something.
Great. So Jess, what you said, don't hold on to rightness. Is that what that? Because I'm using this. I'm just telling you right now, don't copyright it because I'm going to be using it all over the place because that is such a great. Because product managers always freaking do that. They always are like, they're so focused on their thing. They just get in their own heads. And I think that is such a great.
But are they the good ones? Are the good ones like that, Greg?
Think about it. Like you have this idea that becomes your baby and you like, it's really hard to not hold on to rightness. Because holy cow, I've fallen in love with my solution. I've fallen in love with this thing. I care about it so much that I've forgotten that I'm trying to solve the problem, not fall in love with my solution.
Right,
and so holding on to rightness can really get in the way of, I do it. I'm like, but my thing, it's amazing. And you don't understand. Oh, shoot. If I really take a step back and look at it objectively, it's not solving the problem that we were trying to solve.
And that's where product marketing is good because product marketing is like, okay, now I have to talk to everybody else about this. And I sort of understand, like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Help me understand why this is, how I'm going to sell this thing. What's the talk track or what's the one pager on this thing? But product managers have, and to answer your question, Brandon, I think good product managers don't hold on to rightness, but I think they have to fight it. Even if they're good, they have to fight it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it kind of brings us to, and I'm glad you brought up product marketing because I come from a PR background where I was always just like, thanks for waiting till the last minute to tell us everything that you're going to do. So now we have to like figure out the story that we're going to sell to the press and do a big launch party for. Like, it would have been great if we were involved at the beginning, right? In terms of, you know, we also have our own opinions around, hey, that's the problem you're trying to solve. I know exactly the right press to go to. I know exactly the right, you know, that. So all of that kind of at that front space is like, hey, let's organize around product as business, IT, marketing, PR, sales, all that.
Yep.
Like we're basically a unit. And when we talk about kind of the gap that's between them, we talked about IT as a cost center. So the last thing I kind of want to make sure that we touch on is getting into this concept of instead of having a business budget and an IT budget, instead of having a marketing budget and a PR budget. Yeah, Jess.
I need to use the restroom in order.
Okay. I was like, I know we're getting close. Not for your, I don't know your pee breaks that well, but I was like, I know we talked about time. Go ahead. We'll cut back.
We'll cut back.
We'll come back. It's fine.
And I'm gonna get more drink. So I'll
And we're back. With all the shakeups at SNL, I thought it'd be really good to kind of bring that in. But yeah, we were talking about how kind of we had talked about at the very beginning with a gap, one of the kind of the consistent things is this concept of IT as a cost center. And how do we look at bridging that gap? Well, that's really hard. I think we did a really good job in terms of what we're seeing, why it's important, What are the possible solutions? And as part of the solutions, we started to get into, hey, you know, kind of organizing the work. It doesn't, again, organizing the work is different than organizing the reporting structure, right? Mm-hmm. Organizing around the work and being more product central in some way. You know, we talked about different ways that that could be done. A creates efficiency to be able to pivot. You know, we've got people on the same page. Hopefully we've got marketing, sales, you know, product. I mean, it seems a little ideal, but it's actually not that much of a job. I've actually seen it. So I'm not, I'm not like talking about a, hey, this is a wistful thing. Again, this is what I'm seeing. If there's any sort of big T transformation going on right now, this is a hot item. And I think for a very obvious reason is this gap. There's a recognition that every company is a digital company of some sort. And so they have to kind of figure this out. And they tried it through process, they've tried it through framework, and now they're kind of saying, hey, how do we design ourselves around actual products that make sense to the business? Our teams aren't called SAP Enterprise, blah, blah, blah. They're called supply chain, something like they're some way aligned to the actual business that's going on. Like they're not about the systems.
Yeah.
What's that, Jess?
To the delivery of value.
So when the business looks at, hey, this team, they're not saying, what the hell is a Pascal? What the hell is a S4? You know, what the hell is that? You know, and then it forces the IT side of the fence to say, hey, how are we organizing our teams? Is it around systems or is that what we're actually delivering? Can we have four of the same teams that have the cross-functional things of the different parts of what we're actually delivering, the systems that we work in, so that we have the ability to take in more, right? And with that, then you start to look at the traditional accounting, if you will, of budgeting. Now, I think that there's a lot of people in our space, they're like, oh yeah, lean portfolio management, LPM. You know, we kind of cover that. We kind of have this whole thing. That shit's really complicated. Like, I have a hard time trying to explain that to clients, right? And it's maybe I'm not that great at it, and there's a lot of other people that can. But to me, trying to explain that to either someone in the business or a VP or a CIO, again, it's kind of like, yo, that's way too much. Go ahead, Jess.
And in order for LPM to work, you have to have certain things in place. Like you have to be able to place your bets essentially on the different initiatives that you have. And then know, again, back to data, we have all kinds of data that nobody's using. You have to have the data to say, that horse we bet on, that's not working. Let's put it on the horse that is actually starting to pull ahead. So in order for LPM to work, that stuff has to be in place and used, which I haven't seen that being used anywhere.
I mean,
I'm
just going to say, I had a question for you, Brandon, because this is your expertise. So do you think part of the problem is like CapEx versus, you know,
OpEx.
It's the way that OpEx and it's the way that the finance department understands thing that drives it? Or do you think that's not really a problem?
Well, it depends. I kind of mentioned, you know, if you're still very much in the project mode of doing things and the CFO has an outweighing influence on what actually gets funded. Yes. Right. Cause you're basically like, we want more cap. We want less, op. Right. Mm-hmm. Obviously. Right. Because of this shift and the understanding that, hey, we're all digital companies, instead of looking at it as like, oh, we have these big CapEx projects that are like SAP implementations, where's your ROI on that? Like, it's very hard to like unearth what your ROI is on that. It's very, very difficult. And again, it's not, it seems like I'm bashing SAP and I'm not trying to, but it's a very easy example to look at because it is very expensive. And where along supply chain and other things do you start to say, oh yeah, this is where we created some efficiencies, right? Because it's such a long thing to get there. And then you have all the upgrades after that. So it's like, it's kind of you're kicking the cost down the road, down the road. So for me, the true transition is, okay, so this is like the tipping point that Jess was mentioning earlier. The tipping point is around now, where it's kind of like, okay, we've got to be able to react faster. We're all digital companies. There's this gap between business IT. business has a culture, IT has a culture. Business is saying, hey, I need this stuff built. IT is saying, I don't know how I can do that. And then they go off and do shadow IT, and then we create all this technical debt. So sometimes it's a trigger of, God, we got a crap load of technical debt. We got to stop this. That's one trigger, right? Another trigger is, God, we just got beat in the market. That sucks, right? Like, we got to figure this out because we shouldn't have been. I know, Greg, you've run into this in your experience.
I've been there.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
I've been there.
You're like, why did this, you know, we worked with a very big financial service insurance company that was like one of the oldest ones, and they were getting the crap kicked out of them by this little startup that had been around for a long time, but they figured out the digital thing. And you know what I'm talking about? Geico. Geico just kicked the crap out of the entire industry, right? And everyone thinks it's because of the ads. No, it's because they went fully digital, right? So this is the market. And, you know, I work with utilities, I work with government. It's all true across the board because there's an expectation. I mean, our devices just have made us so wanting of faster, faster, faster. So that's the other one. I've missed something in the market. Or third, it's you have a C-suite where you have the CEO, the CIO, COO, CTO, whatever you want to call, whatever, CIO, CTO. And they're kind of like, okay, I don't want to have a fiefdom anymore. This is not working. Because we're all trying to pull for the budgets, and IT as a cost center doesn't work because we're a digital company, right? So, and what my experience is, this is the beauty of CTOs and CIOs. They last 3 to 5 years anywhere.
Yep.
And then they go somewhere else. And so either they've been successful where they've been, and they take that to launch themselves somewhere else, and say, hey, I'm going to do the same thing over here. Or they've been unsuccessful and they leave and they go somewhere else and like, huh, I learned, right? So the ones that are being really successful right now, they're bridging the gap. They're 100% bridging the gap because they understand I can't be a cost center. It's not going to work. So those successful ones are going from company to company. And so when they come to a new one, they're like, nope, this is not how it's going to work anymore. It has to come from that. It doesn't have to, but typically if we're really going to make change, it has to come from that C-suite, right? So those are the environments that I'm seeing. And so what that then starts to create is, okay, how do we bridge that gap? And we already talked about some of the solutions, and that's kind of the solutions that I'm seeing that are out there. Some of them are more advanced. When we really started to talk about what is true product management, that's actually, it's pretty weak in the market. Mm-hmm. I would say, just to think of you work for a product company, so it's probably stronger for you, but I'm talking about these larger enterprise companies. It's pretty weak.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I remember not at the company I'm at now, but at one of the companies that we all worked with together, I've had a product, quote unquote, product person say, I just copy paste information from one system to another. I'm not part, I'm called a product person, but all I do is take an Epic and copy paste information into a smaller thing that I copy paste into a smaller thing, which
a
is
business
not-
analyst, not a product person. Person has an opinion. Product person has an opinion.
Right.
They're always
going to back it up, opinion. But yeah. They got to back like a good one's back it up with, yep. I have the knowledge of our customers. I've had the customers tell me stories, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have been out in the market and I've actually listened, which is a skill of a product person is listening.
Yeah. Right.
Here's what I'm, I just have to say that I'm really, really, really excited about this next set, essentially this next evolution, because what you're talking about, Brandon, is the continuation of the shift in management theory that we saw starting with Agile, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to approach humans and work and things differently than we did before. This is the continuation of that, because with the transformations we've all been a part of, there's still the fiefdoms. There's still, this is mine, that is yours, da 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 da. And what you're seeing, what to me feels like the next evolution in Spiral Dynamics and like how are we evolving essentially as a species, as organizations, how are we evolving, transforming ourselves the most evolved ones are the ones saying, enough with the fiefdoms. That's that's reactionary. That's coming from fear-based, non-creative experience into that next level of, okay, so how are we going to, it's like, it's all above the line thinking. It's all like, it's all of that, but you have to have someone who's willing to go there, because the fiefdoms is still, that's still an entrenched experience. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I don't know. I just think it's this next, it's the next chapter of this evolution of how we are organizing ourselves and how we're showing up for one another. And it's really exciting. It's exciting to be a part
of. It is.
Literally the individual transformation to say, wait a minute, what I'm doing isn't working. I don't need to be afraid and hold on to my silo or my fiefdom. I actually want to open it up, expand, and be creative collectively with people, rather than hold on to everything because I'm afraid for my job. It's like the coolest thing.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been at the last Agile conferences. You have, Jess. I think there's been a lot of, is Agile dead? Like, what's going on? Right. And I think that new ways of working after dark doesn't kind of roll off the tongue. But I mean, I think that new ways of working is really some version of what we're talking about. Right. And I think that's the space, whether we like it or not, like that's the space that I kind of keep feeling myself pulled into, because there's still a lot of relevancy from the Agile stuff, but it really is starting to recognize that, you know, what we were talking about today, and we'll talk about other ones. So in future episodes, we're going to talk about OKRs. We're going to talk about getting people into flow. We're going to be talking about all this really cool stuff that's relevant to what we've been kind of hinting at here. But
I think, Brandon, I'm going to be sick during that OKR one. So you might want to find somebody else to.
Which is so funny, because you were like, hey, there's like, you know, the business has to be able to establish what the measurements are. And I was like thinking in my head, I was like, well, it's freaking OKRs. But if I say that, he's probably going to reach through the screen and punch me in the face. No,
but it's true. It's so true. You're right. You're absolutely right. But they're so hard to do. It's like very complicated. But yes, I agree. That is like, I think the best measurement that you can do.
It's really hot right now. Very similar to the product operating model, like product operating model, OKRs, all that stuff. But that's why we're going to talk about it, right? Because this is what's going on in our space.
I'm excited to talk about that one. Actually, I have many opinions.
But OKRs or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, OKR. Yeah. I have a lot of opinions and experience. And I think, well, you know, maybe that'll be our next one. But to wrap up in terms of like the budgeting piece, like all of this coming around and saying, it doesn't have to be a complicated. You asked the question, Greg, like kind of, you know, where are the starting points? So what I've seen is it's basically you start to bring the business in, you organize around the products, and there's some natural synergies that happen with the budget that you don't have to force. Because instead of saying, business, here's what I want, IT, take it out of your budget, you're starting to co-solution, because the product management is and the product people are bringing the problems. And IT is saying, oh, here are some of the solutions. And then the sales and marketing are kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Like, we create this much efficiency. Like, this is the data we would get out. So that you have just so much more of a holistic view of what you're trying to actually deliver that people are willing to kind of give up a little bit. Whereas, you know, they were so constricted around, hey, you're a business person, I'm going to give you a person. Whereas you start to kind of like have the IT teams be teams that are relevant to the things that are actually delivering to the customers, and the business is like, yeah, that makes sense to me. And IT people are like, yeah, this is the solutions that we're going to do, and you're going to bring me the problems. We talked ad nauseum about there's a lot of behavior change that has to happen there. But I think that this is the tipping point to Jessica's point. This is really the tipping point of, is this the end all be all? You know, we scaled Agile to crazy, to some success. We became feature factories. Yeah, has that really been the most valuable thing? You know, in the end, it's been better, 100% better than it was. But I think there's now a realization of, okay, now that we're a digital company, whether we like it or not, you know, we have to look at things a little differently.
Yeah, I agree. I'm so happy you guys finally caught up to me. So, no, but I do think that, you know, when, you know, I don't know, a few years back, maybe this is 4 years back or so, when you started hearing all the, you know, the agile, certification programs talk about business agility, that was to me the first sign that they were like, okay, there's more than just building good teams. There has to be a business outcome that's tied to it, because to your point, Brandon, and to your point, Jessica, it's hard to change behavior. It's easy to teach. I can teach somebody what agile is in 15 minutes, but it's hard to get them to change behavior. And it's harder to get the C-level people to embrace it and really say it's going to take 2 years to get. I know, even though we have all worked on projects that we can do 2.5 day, you know, sprints, but you know, to get
that's
these
a team
people,
level. That's
the
C-level.
Yeah, but the C-level, they're just tough, you know, and they don't.
And you only
have
get
patience.
3 to 5. Yeah, as I said, the CTO, CIOs, they're there 3 to 5 years. That's it. They're one of the shortest C-suite folks.
And even if they're there after a year, if you're not, you're just building a team the first year. Then you got another year to actually teach them how to do the things doing. So it's a 2 year, in my opinion, in my experience, it's a 2 year endeavor to get people to really change the behavior. And you do have to have coaches in there or at least good managers who understand how to support them and help them say, don't fall back into the thing that feels, you know, comfortable. Okay. Keep pushing forward. It's hard, you know, and it's kind of funny that nobody talks about that, you know, but we do on this podcast though.
Yeah. That's the idea.
Yeah. Agile/ what was it? I think it's
new ways of working after dark.
And actually, you know what? It's not a bad. Actually, Jessica, you bring up a good point, because when you said agile was dead, I thought, wow, that's so weird to think about that, because there's no way. I live my life thinking that way. I mean,
it's not.
I literally
By the way,
changed my
let me clarify,
brain.
It's not. It's not dead. There's a lot of, I brought up that like in a lot of conferences, what I hear the output or outcomes of that is like, is Agile dead? Right, Jess? You've been to them.
Yeah. I was just at the big one, and the overarching outcome, it was really well done. High five Chris Merman and team for doing what they did. But the outcome was it isn't. It's just to our point, to the collective point, is there's sort of just this next wave. And do we call it agile? Maybe, maybe not. Who cares?
Who gives a shit, right? I mean, right. Call it whatever you want.
Right.
Well,
now,
but it does when you're going in.
But we're at the point that it's actually seeped in enough that there is arguably very few organizations that don't have some flavor of agility in their system, kind of. What? That's a whole nother conversation about what we did wrong collectively as a community. And I'll set that down over there and
see
how it turned out.
Good topic.
Because it is a good topic, but it's not dead. It's now kind of part of the DNA. And so then what's that next strand of DNA that we're going to be building upon? Because we are now at the point where it is now, like it or not, part of technology DNA. In every organization.
Yep.
So I've been doing a lot of research lately on these different companies. And the one thing, if you mention agile, a lot of the C-suite people or the operations people, the people who have been around a long time, the people that are a little bit older, that if you mention it, they freak out.
Yeah.
Because they think there's so many religious zealots about agile, because it does. I was definitely one of them. Like, I was like crazy about the fact that, again, it changed my whole life. Seriously. But they just don't want to hear it, because it's like a religious dogma that they're being coached to. And it's like, no, we don't have to use agile. You can use parts of agile. You can use parts of lean. You can just Kanban. Like, you could do it. This depends on what the problem you're trying to solve is. It's not like the only answer is agile and you have to force everything into that one solution. That's why when you said that it's dead, that's what that kind of triggered in my mind. Be like, you know, some people are
none
like,
of us
oh,
said it was
it's
dead.
Boring.
None of us said it was dead. We said that was some of the trends. None of us said it was dead. Okay.
This is Agile After Dark. Okay. We talk about the things.
Here's the thing. Here's what we didn't do. So you said, what is the problem that we're actually trying to solve? That's the thing that we forgot to do as Agilists, is we stopped going after the problem and fell in love with the solution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're talking about. Like, how do we become more product focused, more value delivery for the customer? And so as Agilists or current, former, in between, they, them, who knows, all the things, right? Like, when do we flip our focus to Agile is the solution to what is the problem we're trying to solve and how do we get there? So
you coming from a product company,
great product company, being, by the way,
being like a product manager that said to me when we first started working together, wow, we have no product management skills. And that was 8 years ago. And that really hasn't changed, by the way. Yeah. I've kind of, as this tipping point has kind of come along, and I'm seeing, again, we never talked about Agile being a silver bullet. Product operating models aren't the silver bullet. But what I think is, with every firm being a digital firm of some sort, it just makes sense. Like we talked about today, I mean, it made sense, right? It just, it, you know, this is the way it really needs to go. And it's actually not that much of a shift in terms of, hey, we're changing a bunch of people's roles and titles and all this kind of stuff, right?
It's just advanced common sense.
Yes, advanced common sense. So any other closing arguments in terms of kind of bridging that gap between business and IT you feel like we haven't covered?
Just do it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I do want to say, though, that it's great. We've had a break, a little bit of a break, but these going into these discussions that we have in this podcast, it really, because the three of us, it triggers a million things in my head that I'm going to think about for the next week. And I hope it does the same thing for the listeners, viewers, whatever.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, there's some, and we can say some controversial things, you know, I mean, but we're all trying to get there. We're all trying to figure it out. And nobody has the right answer, the whole answer, right? Because there isn't such a thing. And so I just wanted to appreciate my co-people.
We started out at the beginning of 2018, January of 2018, before podcasts were like this whole, like everyone had a podcast. And sadly, this is our first video one. We had some holdouts as part of the crew.
Sadly, I don't need all of that to be recorded. One, two. I did notice that we didn't have a commercial this time, and I just want to say this podcast is brought to you by Magic 8 Ball. We just shake it up, look at it. Here's where we're headed. Here's the next feature set that we're building. Thank you very much.
I love it. I love it.
Oh my God. You know what, Jessica? The next place I go, I'm going to have a Magic 8 Ball on my bed. And if somebody came over and said, hey, well, we have this problem, I'll be like, hold on a second.
Hold on. I got it.
Ask again later.
So what I want to say is find us on YouTube at Agile After Dark. Subscribe. You'll get the greatest hits from us on a regular basis. Go to where you listen to podcasts, whether it be Apple or Spotify or whatever, you'll find us there. And if you have any thoughts about what you heard today, send an email to feedback@agileafterdark.com. And fam, it's good to get back together and see your faces and talk about this really cool stuff.
100%.
Love you guys.